You're listening to a recorded talk from Greenbelt Festival.
Welcome. And if your name starts with R and it's in the Bible, you're in luck because you could be on stage. They'll tell you, Rebecca will introduce the other two, and I was quite clearly told that Rory's not in the Bible, so I couldn't be there. But we're really interested to hear your stories, because stories of encounter with people are always transformative, and hearing people's stories of their transformation through encounter are always stories worth listening to. So thank you for being here. We will do some Q&A at some point, and when we do, I'll introduce that to you, tell you how we'll do it. But for now, I'll hand over to Rebecca, who will introduce our other two mysterious biblical R's.
Thank you, Rory. And you are very welcome in our club, because, yes, my name is Rebecca. I am a trustee of Refugees at Home and a host. So, yes, Rebecca at Refugees at Home. And our two wonderful guests tonight, who are both hosts, are both called Rachel. So they will shortly introduce themselves with a bit more detail, where they live, who they live with. But just briefly on Refugees at Home, if you don't know about us, we're a UK-wide charity set up in 2016, so next year, 10 years old next year, by a group of friends sitting around a kitchen table thinking what they could do to help Syrian refugees fleeing the civil war. They had the idea to utilise spare rooms in their homes to support refugees who found themselves without a home in the UK and without support from local councils. Since 2016, Refugees at Home has grown to become the UK's largest independent hosting charity, and we have found rooms for more than 7,000 guests from 75 different countries, and we recently reached 700,000 placement nights, every single one of those a night where a guest might otherwise have slept on the streets. Currently, we have guests who are supported alongside the Homes for Ukraine scheme. And then apart from that, the top five nationalities of guests we support are from Sudan, Afghanistan, Eritrea, Iran, and Saudi Arabia. And finishing this off, Joe, in 2024, we hosted 1,183 guests over 150,000 placement nights. The harsh reality is that most of those people would have been street homeless with no support from the state. So we are hugely grateful to our volunteer hosts who open their hearts and their homes to people who have fled from all sorts of things that we don't actually even ask about necessarily, and open their homes to share their homes with our asylum seekers and refugees. So I would like to first of all say hello to the two Rachels, who will introduce themselves, maybe say where you live, who you live with, who's in your home, and then we'll start chatting about what hosting means.
Hello, nice to be here. So I am one of the Rachels. I only have one A in my Rachel. She's the Rachel with two A's. So that's how you can tell us apart. I live in a vicarage in Walthamstow in northeast London with a varying number of children. I've got five children, but some are away at university, and two dogs and an assorted number of cats. As you know, cats kind of ebb and flow, don't they? But around five, and some chickens.
Wonderful. And Rachel with two A's.
Yeah. Hello, I'm also called Rachel. What a coincidence. So I live in Leeds, and I've lived on my own for a number of years, got quite used to that, just me and the dog, but happened to have a spare room. So
amazing. So I'd love to hear when you both first came to hosting, how you found out about us, how you came to hosting, and then maybe a bit about who you have hosted in that time. Do you want to go first?
Okay, so I'm the newbie host. So it was actually at Greenbelt last year that I came to talk about it, and was kind of told they're looking for people who have a room with a door. And as someone who's wanted to do something to help refugees in the past but often been overwhelmed, I heard that and went, oh, I could do that. So it's a bit more than that. I like to see myself as more of a helpful housemate. So that was a year ago. And then through Refugees at Home, I got put in touch with my current guest, who's on the Homes for Ukraine scheme, and she's currently been with me 8 months.
So we've been hosting for quite some time. We're trying to work out when. I think about 9 years. And I can't even remember where I first read about it, but I think I saw it in an article, Refugees at Home, shortly after it had been set up. And I think, like Rachel, I was just looking for something to do that made me feel like I was making a difference, because money's short. There's a limit to how much money I can give. In a way, there's a limit to how much time I can give. But we had a spare room, and it just felt that being able to offer something tangible would be good, not just for them, but also for me and for my family. So, yeah, so we've been hosting for a lot of time, and we're saying how many people we've hosted. I'm not quite sure. So we've hosted people from Sudan, Eritrea, Nigeria, Iran, Syria, Ukraine. There might be others.
And how long have your hosting, how long have they stayed with you, each of them?
So our shortest hosting was for a weekend. So we had a couple from Syria. The guy had been in the UK for 2 years. His wife had just been given reunification visa. And so she had this long and very perilous, even if it was a visaed journey, from Syria to the UK. Refugees at Home contacted us because she was arriving on the Friday. And although they said the council should be housing them, they've got an obligation, their concern was that because it was a Friday, they would time out by the end of office hour on the Friday, and then they would not have anywhere for them to stay. And so we said, yes, that's fine. We're okay for them at the weekend. We'll kind of be on standby. And lo and behold, we get to the end of the Friday, and the council's solution was that because he was housed in a male hostel, they didn't need to do anything as far as he was concerned. And she could spend the weekend sleeping on the night bus, was their solution, because that would be fine and they would deal with it on Monday. So obviously she was quite traumatised, didn't really speak much English. They'd been apart for 2 years and quite wanted to see each other. And so they came to us. So that was our shortest hostie. I think our longest was one of our Ukrainians who we had for about a year.
And your guest is from Ukraine, and the Ukrainian guests tend to stay longer because of the visa situation. Yeah,
she's currently been with me 8 months. On the scheme, you have to commit to 6 months. But she said she wanted to stay a bit longer to save a bit more for a deposit. So she's currently looking for somewhere. But as we all know, it's really hard to find somewhere. So it's trying to give her ideas, but also not be pressuring her. It's a difficult balance. Yeah.
And how does the hosting experience work for you? How much do you share with them? Do you share meals? Do you share food? Do you share your life as flatmates? Or is it more separate? Or does it vary per guest?
I think it probably varies in practice. What I offer when they arrive is we have a key safe anyway, because I've got ADHD and no brain, so I can't possibly remember to take my keys. So I don't give them a key. Our key lives in the key safe.
ADHD and a big brain, can we just...
So they have access into the house at whatever time they want. They have a space in the fridge, a cupboard for food, and their room. I show them where the washing machine is and how that works. I'll talk to them about the things that are around that they might need, and then I kind of leave them to it. So I don't cook for them, they're cooking for themselves. Sometimes we have ended up sharing meals, but that's gone kind of either direction. If they're in the kitchen and I'm cooking and there's enough, sometimes they'll end up sharing with me. Or if maybe I'm out and my poor children are stuck at home with only a pizza, they might end up having to eat a pizza and then a whole plate of spaghetti because the refugees have taken pity on them for being abandoned.
What about you, Rachel? How much do you interact?
Probably quite similar. So it's more than a housemate, because obviously my guest, she arrived with just her suitcase, so we share pots and pans, and it does change as it's gone on. So like the first night I did cook for her, and we were really chatty and good friends, and she needed a lot more support, like working out national insurance numbers. I needed to learn that, and good friends. And then as it goes on, she's got a job, she's got her own routine, and she's pretty independent. It was quite important for me when I was talking through the application process that I needed somebody quite independent. You know, I eat erratically, and sometimes struggle to feed myself, so I needed somebody who was quite independent. But that's all part of the process to work out that what I can offer is sustainable.
So that actually leads on to my next question. Can you tell us a bit about the application process and how you're able to lay out your needs, your boundaries, your requests?
It was just a kind of a big conversation, really, them working out my life, some random questions, some things I thought about, some things I hadn't thought about, like how would you manage a guest of a different religion? So it was good to challenge me, because I've lived with housemates before, but having a guest who will have more needs. So it was good to talk those things through. And like once I got through the approval stage, you helped me write like a list of house rules. Because, you know, I've lived on my own for a couple of years, you know, my home is my safe space. So that's probably been the most challenging thing for me. But having like those lists of rules, so I could say to somebody, this is my home, this is what to expect, would you feel comfortable here, has actually been very useful.
And you probably can't remember back to when you first started, but how do you find the support from the placement team at Refugees at Home? Are you able to ask questions?
So I suppose what I find most useful is being able to be clear about what I'm able to offer. And so if we are in a point of family life where I can offer a short period, then I feel safe if I'm... So they email me and say, are you okay having this person? I feel perfectly fine to say, no, actually, that won't work for me at the moment, which is great. And to be able to say, actually, what I could do, I can manage 2 weeks. If you can find someone for 2 weeks, I've got a bed for them. And then Refugees at Home are really good at filling the beds up.
Yes, and actually, as a host, as well as a trustee, I will endorse, it's been amazing having the support I get to say no as well as to say yes, so that each interaction is really comfortable and therefore joyful is incredible. So what have you learnt from your experience of hosting? And also, actually, we didn't touch on this, or your family, what has been learnt?
Yeah, so we've been hosting for, as I said, kind of 9 years. So we've got 5 children who are now kind of pushing grown up, but they've been growing up with hosting being a thing that we do. And I was saying earlier, it ebbs and flows. It's got a bit of a kind of sense of breath to it, that we've got times when we've got people in the house and times when we haven't. Sometimes I talk about it as my house having elastic walls. I like the way that it stretches. It stretches to fit to different shape, and then it kind of pings back again. And it feels like that's kind of what our family shape is. Our family shape is something that ebbs and flows, that stretches in and out to encompass different people. And I think that's been really valuable, really important for me as a parent and for my children growing up. I think it's really useful to feel that you're part of something that's a bit bigger than just your little modular family.
And Yeah.
I've learned how to say goodnight in Ukrainian, which is Nado Branich. I'm a numbers girl, so words don't come naturally to me, but I felt it was a way of making my guest feel welcome, was, you know, to be able to say good morning, good night in her own language when she's struggling and does really well with English. My dog loves everybody, but she was delighted to be given a cuddly toy teddy, who we've named Slonik, which means baby elephant in Ukrainian.
And Rachel, how do you manage your expectations and also the expectations of your family? Because obviously each guest is different, both in the length they stay and the country they come from, but in personality, in their level of English. How do you each navigate that?
So I suppose it's just that making sure you know what you're able to offer and also what you're not able to offer. And I think that's it. It's a good thing to kind of assess that and to assess it every time and think what you're kind of... I knew that, like with the Ukraine scheme, I would not want to be hosting families with children because the dynamics just wouldn't work. So be clear about what you're able. What were you saying?
At different levels of English. Different levels of English.
I tend to communicate a lot by WhatsApp GIF. Because if you can't say it in a little video clip, then probably it's not worth saying. But to try to explain things in English to people who don't speak much English, I think all of us in our family are really good at using clear English to explain. I think that's a useful skill. It feels almost like a third language we've got in our pocket of being able to talk English to speakers of other languages. Often, if I'm explaining things, I'll explain verbally and then I will follow up with a WhatsApp message with GIFs in it, because that seems to lighten the mood a little bit. And so it keeps things a bit playful, but also it sometimes seems to somehow add clarity. You wouldn't think GIFs were useful for that, would you? But we find they're really helpful.
Interesting. Have you had things that have gone wrong? What has been hard about it? Because we don't want to sugarcoat this. We don't want to say it's always amazing. We want to be honest. Interested to explore where you found things tricky and maybe how you've navigated that.
I think tricky things we've found is sometimes it can be difficult when you're coming towards the end of a placement, particularly if you feel you're driving when the placement needs to finish, because you're very aware of what needs are. And you know that while they're in your house, in your spare room, they're safe. And yet you also know that your family capacity means that they need to be moved out. And it's very hard to not feel terribly selfish when that happens, because you think, well, why am I putting my wish to be able to have my house back to ourselves for a bit above somebody else's safety off the street? But you need to look after yourself, isn't that, you know, that thing with, if you're on an aircraft, you need to take on your own oxygen mask. You have to look after yourself so it's sustainable.
Yeah, I can really relate to that. I think something else was in managing my own like expectations long term, because when my guest moved in, we can both really chat. So when she first moved in, like, we were chatting so long, I did have to say by 10:30 on a weeknight, we need to stop chatting. So we felt like friends. And then like a few months down the line, we kind of got into our own routines. We work very different shifts and schedules. So sometimes we're like passing ships and not talking much to each other. And it was making sure, reminding myself that that's okay. You know, she needs her space as well. So it's also kind of reminding myself to manage my own expectations.
And I'd love to know... there was a question actually that we discussed earlier that I think would be interesting to air here around safeguarding. How do you feel, Rachel, about inviting strangers to you and near strangers to other people into your house with your children?
So, yes, we were talking about this earlier, weren't we, about kind of how safeguarding asks actually to A, Rachel was asking me, and we thought we better not get all the questions out of the way over there, because otherwise we'll have nothing to talk to you about. But I think partly it's that I feel that when we get a referral, they've been referred to Refugees at Home from a third-party organisation, and so they are known to somebody. It's not just a name picked off a piece of paper. I know when the Home for Ukraine system scheme was first set up, there were a plethora of quite terrifying Facebook groups, weren't they, of desperate people wanting to get out of Ukraine and people literally just plucking people with no background and no background checks. And I think I felt quite uncomfortable with that as a scheme, as a situation. And with Refugees at Home, I know that anyone who's referred to me is referred to by a referrer who knows them, who's met them, who has to do with them. Because these aren't people who are coming straight into the country. They're people who've been in the country for a while and the referrer has had them on their books and been working with them. So I suppose that's one thing. I know that someone's vouching for them. The stakes are really high if you're a refugee in the UK. You can't put a foot wrong. You know you need to be behaving really well. So there's that. And also, yeah, we were saying as far as abuse goes, abuse tends to happen within families with people you know. Actually, statistically, that's where the danger is. So I suppose if you were to have someone else in your house anyway, you would be doing your kind of making sure that you know where they are, where your child is, making sure you keep lines of communication open, that your children can be coming and talking to you about if there's any issues.
Can I also add, so slightly off on a tangent, but so I live on my own. And when I came, I approached the charity. I said, actually, it's quite important for me. I'd prefer just to host a female. And that was, I felt really listened to. And that I could give back, but I would, in a way, I'd feel more comfortable.
Wonderful. So, before we open to questions, so do think about some questions. What would you say to somebody who is considering hosting? What would your advice be?
I think my advice would be think really carefully about what you think you can offer. Think through your life and what happens in your house and who you have there and kind of how the pattern of your days are, and be really clear about whether you're able to offer a door and a key in a room or whether you're wanting to offer a little bit more, and maybe to kind of set your expectations slightly lower. And if you think, oh yes, I'd love to have someone in my house and take them to the doctor's surgery and cook all their dinners, dial it back, because you can always offer more if you're wanting to, but it's just easier if you are clear from the start.
And yes, what would you say to somebody who's considering hosting?
That was really good advice. I think definitely look into it more, explore it, test that door, like, you know, do fact finding. Is it worth something that could work for your family? And if you don't look into it, you don't know.
Rory, we would love to have any questions that you have about any aspects of hosting that you can ask us or the Rachels.
Oh, sorry. That's fine. You're incredibly generous with your Q&A time. Gosh, all of you might even get a turn if you'd like to. I think questions will primarily be for Rachel and Rachel, and it would help if you pointed at the one you wanted or just took whichever one answered first. I don't know. Of course, Rebecca can speak for the organisation. So if that happens, can you just share a microphone with Rachel? Rachel without another A, and we'll go from there. So if you want to ask a question, then just pop your hand up. I will bring the microphone to you, and I'll hold it for you. Please speak into it. Don't ask the PA system to do all the work, so we can all hear you clearly. And then you can take your time to reflect on the questions and how you want to answer them. We try to avoid people telling stories, usually in our sessions, but you may have a story that just very briefly can be part of an experience you've had or someone you know who's hosted, because the stories of these experiences matter in this kind of context just as much as the questions. So it's not like, oh, I've also ridden a bicycle a long way, which happened earlier today. It's a different kind of story. So if you do have a story, you're welcome to bring that too, but you'll please keep it brief. Does that sound like it makes sense? Okay. So we've got a hand up there first. I'll pop across. I think I can go that far. I've got 20 meters of cable, and we'll see where we go.
I'll hold it for you. Thank you so much. This has been really helpful, and also I think there are lots of assumptions I'd made that you've busted, so that's great. I have two questions. Should I ask one at a time? Yeah. The first one is, one of the things that's always kind of put me off is knowing that these people will have had a very bad time and therefore will probably have quite a lot of emotional needs, and being really worried that I wouldn't be able to provide what they needed, or like the emotional support that they needed, that in that way I wouldn't kind of get it right. But the way that you're talking about it sound like it doesn't sound, that hasn't come up. So I'm just really interested about that.
Do you want to pop your other question in as well? And then, well, let's just ask them both now. Then I can go back there.
Oh, okay. And then the other one is just, we're queer and trans, and obviously like having someone in your home that is misgendering you every day is not a very pleasant experience. So this is more of a question for you of like, is that something that is taken into consideration? And like, you know, queer people are everywhere, including refugees. So like, is there pathways within the charity for that kind of matching?
Okay. Yeah, thank you. Can I start with your first question? But I think I want to say something about both of them, actually. But as far as your first question goes, got blank. What was it again? What were we talking about? Emotional. About emotional needs. So we've hosted, I lose track, probably 20 plus people over the past 9 years. There's only been one of the people who's ever opened up about anything from their trauma of their background. I think often people are more needing a safe space to process in their own time and in their own room. So quite often we've had people who have arrived at ours who are exhausted from kind of holding themselves together. The whole asylum system's really tough anyway. And so they will come to us, and often they will go to their room, they'll just basically sleep for a week, and we'll see them emerging sometimes for coffee, but very little of anything else. And so I think that's the emotional support that I'm able to provide, is actually a room of their own where the door shuts. I think this is what I said last year, wasn't it? That in itself, I think, is the emotional support. So yeah, only one out of all our people has ever talked about any of their trauma. I'm very careful to not ask questions, because I figure if people are wanting to talk, it will come up in its own time. What we have found is actually being in a safe space in a family home has allowed people to remember some of the stuff that makes them human from before awful things have happened. And we've had lovely conversations with people talking about camping in the Sudanese desert and sitting around a campfire and looking at the stars. And just these, because people have a whole life, don't they? And I think that when you have gone through the experience of being a refugee, sometimes, especially like you're having to fill out this paperwork, and it feels like your entire life has to be pulled into these few years where your experience is of refugee. But actually to be able to let people have a space to reconnect with the person that they were before and somehow tie that with the person that they're becoming, I think is really valuable. Did you want to say something about that?
Yeah.
That bit.
I think that was a concern I had as well. When I had my, like, I don't know, it's not an interview. Home visitor. So when I had my home visitor, like, one of the questions they asked is, what would you do if they had a mental health crisis? And I went, I don't know. Which we then kind of maybe talked about, maybe get them to talk to their GP and da-da-da-da-da. And we've got Refugees at Home charity you can reach out to. But I think also, like, it's their story as well. And my experience of one guest hasn't been a lot, but little things, like in my first week, my guest arrived. She came in and said, "Rachel, what's that noise?" And it was the police helicopter over the top. And I live in Leeds, central Leeds, and we have the police helicopter over all the time. But it's that reminder. We hear about the war in Ukraine happening. But for me, it was a reminder that I needed of where she came from. But no, I haven't.
We're always careful to give people a lead-up trigger warning before Bonfire Night, because obviously It's a UK festival. No one else does Bonfire Night, do they? But if we're kind of aware that people need to know that there will be explosions and it's fireworks, because they might not be expecting it.
So I host very short term, and again, I would say I was a bit worried about adding emotional support. And it's just when you see somebody walk into a room, if they've been maybe even in a hostel or one of the hotels, and they walk into somewhere and you can just see their shoulders go down because they have a door they can shut, and you realize that that is emotional support, as you said. And then on your other question, the charity completely is supportive and safeguards both our guests and our hosts. So we would want to have conversations with both of those. And everyone in the charity is very aware that anyone needs to feel safe in their own home when you're opening it. There are many queer households, there are trans hosts. I come from a household that includes trans and queer people, and that is discussed, and no guest would be sent to us. That would be dangerous, and if anything went wrong, they would be moved on. And similarly with any guests, we have increasing number of trans guests who are fleeing, and we are making sure that they are safe and they're put into homes that will support them in every way they should be supported. Did you want to add?
Yeah, I was just going to say that obviously, as you're saying, there are queer refugees, and refugees at home are finding places for them to stay. So, yeah, I can imagine it might be quite a nice supportive place if someone's fleeing on account of transphobia from wherever, then it's quite nice to find somewhere where you feel doubly at home.
Hi, thank you. That's been incredibly helpful, someone who's new to all of this. I've got a question that's really practical that possibly Rebecca, you might be able to answer, but say if you can't. I would be interested in short-term hosting, so just weeks rather than months. But I'm a single person and get council tax discount. Do you know what the situation is with the local authority?
I had the same question. So I rang my local council. Ring your local council because it depends on them. So if they're on the Homes for Ukraine scheme, they're exempt. If they're a full-time student, they're exempt. But then there's a grey area for other guests. I managed to pin my local council down to what they don't want is somebody claiming and living there permanently and not paying council tax. So I sort of vaguely pinned my local council down to 6 weeks as a maximum. But that was kind of hard to get a number out of them. But ring your local council because it varies between them, and it's more they wanted to see something is temporary because of the council tax, and that was their explanation. I don't know what you thought, but that's what I looked into because I had the same question.
And I think, yeah, when I first hosted, I was on my own, and now my daughter's back living with me, so it became moot. And I think I personally, so I wouldn't have, would think when you're talking a week, you could have anyone stay for a week. If it becomes 6 months, that becomes slightly different. That was sort of my view, and I'm doing short-term hosting. So I think, well, yeah, you know, I could have a friend staying for a week. But also, so if you do host, you would have a placement coordinator assigned to you, and our team will also have experienced lots of questions. So there will be some FAQs. There are some FAQs on our website. There will be even more that are all in that they know that I'm afraid I can't, but that's it now.
Thank you. We have a little annex which obviously attracts council tax. We've had five teenage refugees in two batches, and because of education, it's been exempt. I wonder if a person started working, obviously we don't need money to change hands, and I'm assuming money doesn't change hands, that this is just guests. But again, I need to ask the council about that. But do you think that's likely to change if the person, for example, were in work? Would they be expected to pay council, or would we be expected to pay council tax?
I would imagine that would change it, but I don't know the answer. And definitely email in or speak to our team about that, or speak to your council. But I'm guessing it will change it.
Yeah, another practical question. So, I mean, you mentioned kind of food. Like, do people, when they first arrive, have money? Do I need to provide them with food if I hosted? Like, how does that kind of work in terms of practicalities? Do people have a budget? How does it all work?
So if they are coming under Homes for Ukraine, then they're eligible to be allowed to work, and they're also eligible for benefits. So they will have whatever regular benefits people would have, and other people are in receipt of whatever benefits they have. So they have got some money. It might be, like you were saying, the first night you cooked for her because she didn't have anything in. That's a difference, isn't it? You might be able to afford to go shopping later, but when you've just moved to somewhere, it's just nice to look after someone.
And we do also have a bursary system for a small amount to help with the overheads. It doesn't realistically cover all the overheads, but some people use it in different ways, whether to help with their food bills or whether to help offer to the guest to be able to pay for an Oyster card. People can use it differently, but it's a small amount.
Hello, thank you. Okay, yeah. So firstly, knowing I know Rebecca, and I've hosted Homes for Ukraine with the City of Sanctuary where I live. So I just want to say, like, Rebecca really inspired me to really think about this. But I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit, Rebecca. I think in this conversation we've talked a lot about wanting to keep ourselves safe, but many of these people are really, really vulnerable. Could you maybe talk through some of the processes about how you ensure that the refugees coming to hosts are kept safe?
Thank you. So everyone who applies to host will have a visit from a home visitor. Our home visitors are often former GPs, or they have worked in those sort of areas where they can assess people and have worked that way. So there'll be a detailed discussion. The person will ask to see your house. They can be done on Zoom. And also talk through the needs of the family. They make sure that they get consent from everyone, certainly every adult, and ideally older children who live in the house with you. But also find out about you, get to know you, to understand you, as you say, to make sure that we are safeguarding our guests as much as we are safeguarding our hosts. And we see ourselves as a charity. We talk a lot about both hosts and guests. Our charity should serve both of them to make this all work. And you know, we've been going for 9 years. The number, it's a tiny percentage where it doesn't work out. And then the other thing is you can get in touch with the charity 7 days a week. We have duty people on over the weekend, so if there are any problems, we will be contacted either by the guest or the host, and we act very quickly, that there is no questions. We're not going, well, we'll investigate that and then we'll make a decision. No, that will be finished and then we'll work out what's going on. But we are 100% there to support both the guest and the host. Now, many guests are also working with a referrer, as you said. So, and some guests self-refer. They're ones who have been here longer, have a better level of English, and often with refugee status, so they're in a better position to advocate for themselves. The people who are more vulnerable will also have a caseworker. So we're not working with anyone without a caseworker. And we only have guests who are over 18. And if they are age disputed, or maybe there's a family member who's younger, we work with another charity together with migrant children who are fully versed in all the safeguarding. So that is their role. So we know where our role is, which is hosting. And we then partner with other charities if there are other aspects that come towards hosting, but we say we will be excellent, deeply experienced and really good at hosting, and then we will connect with other people working in the sector for the other aspects that matter.
I want to jump in. There's lots of practical conversation which anyone could continue at the stall, so we're not robbing that time. But there's a view, and Richard Dawkins was really strident about this for a while. He's less so now, but that all of our altruism is essentially selfish, that we whatever we do for others, whatever we give, is ultimately self-protecting and about advancing our own genetic material or whatever. I'm curious about, for the two of you, Rachel, what's changed in you because you've hosted? What's shifted or moved in you as you experience yourself as human beings? There's obvious difficulty, but also the reward of volunteering, you know, giving your homes in the way that you do. But the encounter with a stranger is always transformative. And I just wonder what your, if you'd like to go there, and it's an invitation, what's different in you because you've done this? And maybe, Rebecca, it's part of your story as well in terms of how you got involved. But beyond the practicalities, this changes people. What's changed?
I think with me, I feel more hopeful hosting. Not just hopeful because I know I've done something good, but because having contact with people who have actively chosen to come and be part of the UK, sometimes at a time where you feel quite despairing of what your country's becoming, I feel quite a hopeful thing. They can see something in the UK that sometimes I struggle to hold on to myself. They can see it as a place of hope, of belonging, of wanting to learn the national anthem, wanting to taste cream tea, wanting to kind of enjoy, like, visit the House of Parliament. Things that kind of, when I get despairing about what the UK feels like it becomes sometimes, with this kind of, I don't know, narrative about kind of things getting worse and all the kind of xenophobia and the negativity, to have people who have made a choice to come here, I find very hopeful.
You don't ask easy questions, do you? I think it's definitely challenged me and grown me as a person. So, like, it's not been easy. Some of the things, like, I'm very much, like, set in my ways. I have my ways of doing things. And sometimes having someone else from a different background, it can, and life experience, you know, some things are, like, actually it's not important. Does it matter if she doesn't use a baking tray in the oven? No, not ideal, but oh well. But, like, for me, security and feeling safe is quite a black and white thing. So I think about things and I go, actually, no, I will mention that to her. So some things are important, and it challenges my own things and my own thinking. And I had another point and it's gone. And also, yeah, like you said about British ways. So things like, why do British people say goodbye so many times? Right. Never crossed my mind before, but like, you have a maintenance person come around and it's, oh, thank you for coming. That was really helpful. Have a nice day. Goodbye. That's three goodbyes. I'd never considered that before. So it challenges you in different ways.
Yes, I think it's a bit of what both of you have said. The breathing of the house. I think I like my house to be quiet and I like to hide away. And I think it's, and then it's your point about challenge. It challenges me to bring somebody into my house, but then it's positive. And then it reminds me that I need to be flexible in my thinking and not get stuck in my ways because somebody coming in does something differently or just is in my house. But then it also brings me joy. So it's reminding myself to keep forcing my thinking out of its box.
Yes, we've been hosting a few people for a number of years, but one of the things that we've found is frying pans. it's very important because if you've got a frying pan that you use just for pancakes and you start frying eggs and rice and all that, it ruins it. So we've had to hide it. Anyway. But it's been so rewarding having the guests we've had. We've had Muslim guests who've been wonderful. They've been up there in the room doing the prayers and stuff. And they're so lovely when they come down and they're so accepting. And then they call you dad and mum and it's lovely. So we find it very rewarding. But I would say that as a retired person, as a retired couple, we're now extremely busy. So it's very, we think it's important that you have time when they first come to have that long, gentle, happy conversation to get to know one another a bit. And we felt occasionally that maybe we've been in too much of a rush and we haven't really done that properly. Okay.
Yeah, one funny thing is the washing up. I get really frustrated and I've learned to be tolerant because they don't want, some of our guests, and most of our guests, don't want to fill a bowl of water and wash the things up. They run the tap, keep using more soap and more soap. So that's been a thing with more than one of them. And I've just had to, well, does it matter? Exactly as you said, does it matter? And I think that's something you learn to be tolerant about things and learn another culture.
I just have to say my adult daughter came back to live with me and I have a frying pan issue with her.
I want to say thank you for being so honest about something that probably sounds petty as you say it, but that you're willing to say that as part of this experience of the world being the way we want it to be and then others interrupting that and us making room for that. It's such an important point you've made, so thank you. Anyone else? Yeah.
Probably more a question to Rachel with 1A and Rebecca. Have you kept in contact with people who've been with you and then moved on?
So some people have been with us and I've never heard from them again. Some people have been with us and we've been quite close to them and I've never heard from them again. Some people have been with us and we've stayed in touch. So we had one of our very early hosts from Sudan. So, yeah, long time ago, 8-9 years ago, he was staying with us. And he was getting married just this weekend in Egypt. He sent me a WhatsApp and did invite me with about 1 week's notice. But I'm afraid I'm here instead. So congratulations him on his wedding. Yeah, so we have some people who we stay with and who are kind of family friends. We've had a woman who was here from Nigeria, and we were hosting her. She was brought here for domestic slavery, and then she was on the streets, and then she was in our house at 30 weeks pregnant. She had the baby. You might have heard rumours of this from the... It was one of the good refugee stories. Everyone's like, I'm glad I didn't get that one. she had the baby early and very, very small. She, I took her to the hospital. It was emergency crash C-section. She survived. The baby survived. It was all bit touch and go. The other week, they turned up at church so that I could sign forms for citizenship for the little girl who's now running around. She's non-verbal, autistic, like 7-year-old, 8-year-old, but she's fine, she's smiley, she's enjoying the world. She's got a little brother and another little sister, and how lovely is that?
Yeah. And I'd say from my experience, hosts, there's a mixture of people who stay in touch. We recognise that we're a stepping stone, we're part of their journey, and yes, sometimes they'll stay in touch, sometimes they won't. The connection can be really strong, but then they need to move on with their journey. So it's a variety.
A question directed a little bit more to Rachel on the operational side of things. The legal route to the UK for a lot of asylum seekers and people coming from war zones and places that are unsafe is often very, very limited. Do refugees at home work with people who are coming from like maybe a slightly broader view than just the traditional definition of the legal route into the UK, which is incredibly narrow, and kind of like if you do, how do you approach that?
If you're still here, so I'm a trustee, but we work with people who are in the UK already, and then we don't ask how they got here. But if they are in the system, they are asylum seekers or refugees, we will work with them, and that's our remit. That's where we land. And so we're not looking into how they got here.
I'm going to jump in again.
Although I did it once. I did once host someone who was in the Calais jungle at the same time I was volunteering in the Calais jungle, but we didn't meet at the same time. Got a little link in France.
I'm curious to ask you another difficult question. Sorry, Rachel, but what has doing this cost you in terms of the opinions of family and friends? You know, those outside of your life, people who are part of your life, but who may have different views or worry about your safety or, how have you negotiated doing this as someone who has a life that includes other people who have opinions, and what has that done to those relationships, or has it cost you anything in your relationships?
I tend to keep it quite quiet, so I describe her more as, I just describe her as my housemate, because I don't know, I don't feel fully comfortable going, oh, she's my guest. And so it is more of a housemate relationship. A couple of people, so like close family, have been really supportive. But a couple of people I've explained, particularly when my guest was applying and all of that, been going, oh, that's a lot to take on. And they seemed more worried than I was. I don't know, it's just me. I don't. Here I am talking publicly about it, but I more just say, you know, she's my housemate, and that's my way of making it feel more equal and inclusive.
I think it's that extra third win. So we've got a win for the host and a win for the guest, haven't we? We've talked about, but I think there's this third win for all the people who, as a host, you have to do with in your life, because suddenly everybody I know knows by proxy someone who's come to the UK in a dinghy or in the back of a lorry, and suddenly they're a person. And as soon as it's a person rather than this kind of terrifying tabloid headline, it completely shifts attitudes, and people can't think the same things about this person who lives in my house and cooks my kid spaghetti as they do about the headlines.
Hi, I've been considering hosting for refugees, and I've learned quite a bit from the conversations we've had now. I'm a single male, I'm retired, and I had a successful relationship with my wife for 52 years, but she's passed away 2 years ago. So I'm now in a situation where I'm a free agent and I could host somebody, but and I have a spare bedroom, but I would need to talk, and again off the record, is there anything that you would say would definitely be a red line, like, no, you can't host somebody with children, or you can't do something else? Could you just explain a little bit about that, those kind of aspects, and also anybody else who wants to make a comment?
I don't think we have red lines. We talk to humans. It's very much an individual matching service. I mean, of course, we use databases and make connections, but you know, we start from a point of view of people want to help people, and then we will explore whether or not it's going to work. But I don't think we start with red lines. And just on that, if anyone wants to have further conversations, we're in the takeaway tent. We'll be there for the next couple of days. We also, you know, our team are always happy, and we're offering a thing that you can just leave your email address and we'll follow up after Greenbelt. And we have like a callback service, so we will just have a long chat with you, the sort of long chat we could have here or over the phone, to discuss all the different aspects of hosting, things that you might be worrying about, things that we might worry about, so that you can have that initial sounding out conversation before you then apply and we send a home visit around, so that it's just to start the sounding out process. Because we recognise that there's a journey for each host, not as much as the journey that the guest has gone on, but a different sort of journey, and we want to be there with you for that as well.
So just a quick question. How long does the actual application process take once you've made the decision that you want to host?
Phoebe, who is at the back, do you want to shout out an answer? Because I don't actually know the answer to that.
Yeah, I would say if you're in like a high demand area, so we'd say that's like London, Manchester, Sheffield, Glasgow, generally, we could get you processed quite quickly and maybe hosting within a week, 2 weeks from when you apply, also depending on your availability for the home visit. If you're in other areas that maybe aren't as high, maybe we get you approved within a couple of weeks, but then we might not have a potential guest for you immediately. We'd have to see what our guests referrals are before approaching you with a potential guest. So it's kind of high demand areas, but then also the demand changes and fluctuates throughout the UK. So yeah, it's hard to say, but I hope that helps.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're out of time. I wish there'd been more of you. Not that those of you who are here aren't wonderful people, but what a rich
quality.
What a rich set of stories and willingness in the three of you to come and tell us something of your experience and what it's given you, what it's cost you. We're talking about human beings, and it's so important to remember that, and the humanizing of refugees through the connections, like, you know, things around gender and sexuality, so many other things. It's the human experience and encounter that transforms people's ideas. So thank you to the three of you. I want to finish just reading something to you. It's a quote by D.H. Lawrence, and it's something I heard a long time ago, and it stuck with me, and I wondered whether it would fit in the session, and I think it does. D.H. Lawrence once said, "The world fears a new experience more than it fears anything, because a new experience displaces so many old experiences. The world doesn't fear a new idea. It can pigeonhole any idea, but it cannot pigeonhole a real new experience." And I think in your willingness to open your homes and others who are here who've done that, you've opened yourself up to an experience that has cost you something and given you gifts. And just to encourage you through the course of the weekend, if you don't know where refugees at home are, as you go back up and turn right through the kind of arcade of stalls, refugees at home are there. I spoke to Phoebe earlier. Rebecca had gone off somewhere. They're there. Go and chat. Go and ask all your questions. As Rebecca has said, all the information you need to think about this as long as you want to, or to advocate for it and speak for it. One of the things about Greenbelt is the challenge when you go away from a session, what are you going to do because of this? And maybe it's even just keep in mind those who are doing the hosting and the organizations doing them. But what is this asking you to do? And I hope that each of you goes away with that question in a helpful way this evening, however busy your day's been, whatever you're still planning this evening. We've got one more session in here, and then if you're coming back for the glitter ball disco, anyone? Anyone? Good job. I will not be here. That starts at 10:30, and then we're back in the morning at 9:30. I hope you've had a good first day, and could you just express your warmest appreciation to Rebecca, Rachel, and Rachel.
Thanks so much for listening to this recorded talk. Explore our full Greenbelt Festival Talks archive with almost 20 years of recorded talks and podcasts for free at greenbelt.org.uk/talks.